drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome to episode 7. We're chatting with Susanna Brinkley today. Susanna is a freelance graphic designer from Charlotte, North Carolina. She's the editor of the blog Feast and West, which focuses on food, design, and travel. She also runs the website Garnishing Co., which aims to help bloggers and creative entrepreneurs with branding and graphic design when they just can't afford to hire a top-dollar designer to do it from scratch. Susanna has contributed articles and her photography around the web and has not one, but three seriously great Instagram feeds. We're really excited to chat with her today about following multiple creative directions and how she makes time for all of them. So welcome to the podcast, Susanna. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we are excited that you are here. So I guess we'll dive right in. Tell us a little bit about life so far and how you got to where you are.
Okay. I grew up in Charlotte, and I was always really interested in art. And I also did dance when I was a kid, but I just was really encouraged by my parents to be creative. My sister is a painter and a fine artist, so I was like always around just creativity. And when I got into high school, I joined the newspaper staff at the encouragement of a teacher, and I just loved it. I like didn't even know graphic design was a thing then. And I went to journalism camp one summer and learned all about like page layout, and I just sort of fell in love. And that's kind of like the beginning of my whole career, was like right there in high school. I can pinpoint a moment. And then I ended up going to college for graphic design. I kind of struggled if I wanted to do journalism or if I wanted to do graphic design, but I was really stronger at designing. So, and I actually didn't get into any of the journalism schools I applied to. So that also made my decision for me. But I went to NC State in Raleigh, and I worked on the newspaper and the yearbook, and I was the editor of the yearbook in college. It was kind of a different yearbook, not what you would think when you think of a like senior portrait kind of book. It was a lot different, and it was so much fun, and I got a lot of really good leadership skills, and just always had, I was so busy in college, like it was the best. And then I did some good internships. I worked at magazines and a couple of agencies, and I tried a lot of different things. And then I graduated, and it was the recession, and I couldn't get a job and what I wanted to do. And I started freelancing just a little bit here and there with odd jobs. And then I did end up getting a job at an ad agency, which is totally opposite direction of journalism and where I wanted to be with my career. And but it was a job, so I took it and I did it, and it was really good. And then I was laid off, and it was awful. And I decided to move back to Charlotte, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And I thought about moving to New York City and getting a job at a magazine, but I thought I'd kind of missed the boat on moving to New York City, and I didn't want to be broke all the time. And it just didn't seem like something I really wanted to do. So I decided to move to Charlotte, stay here for a little while, figure things out. And I had some freelance jobs already that I had been doing on the side of my ad agency job. So I just kept doing those, and the one turned into another, and I've just kind of been freelancing ever since. It wasn't really like, I'm going to freelance. It just happened. So, And then I started my blog because I really wanted to get back into writing and taking pictures because that's something I really loved doing when I was in college. And I really wanted to start a magazine. That's where my mind was when I was coming up with my blog, but I ended up deciding to start a blog instead because I didn't have funds for a magazine and I didn't have an audience yet, and who was going to give me funds on Kickstarter if no one knew who I was. So I started a blog, and that just seemed like the right choice. So I thought really hard about it. I used my ad agency experience to brand myself and really be strategic and, you know, do it the right way, like not start it on Blogspot. And, you know, I got really into the, like, mechanics and thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be all in. So I, you know, had an editorial calendar and everything. So how my blog got started. And then last year I was still freelancing, but I'm really into this idea of passive income and wanting to, you know, be able to travel. My sister lives in Egypt now, so I'd really like to go and spend time in Egypt and just travel a little bit and, you know, not be in one place all the time and not always doing work for other people. So I thought I could, one thing I noticed when I started blogging was that there weren't a lot of resources out there. So I thought as a designer, I could help other people and give them some of the information they needed if they wanted to start a blog or, you know, fix up their Etsy shop or start a website or something. So that's kind of how I got here.
Wow, that is a wonderful story. Like you said, that started in high school. You can kind of pinpoint the moment that you knew what you wanted to do. And that is really amazing. I have to say, I'm completely surprised to find out that you only started blogging in 2014. Because I think that's when I may have met you, pretty close to the end of 2014, maybe beginning of 2015. And I've always been just so impressed by how professional your blog is and how well you have things laid out. And so it really makes sense now that you started at an ad agency and that kind of taught you how to be a blogger as well. So kudos to you. I had no idea that you were such a young blogger.
Thanks. Yeah, it still doesn't feel like it's been that long, really. Like, I just had my 2-year anniversary of blogging and people always say that. I'm like, but I really am new. I read all kinds of books about blog. Like, I read books, which felt so weird to read a book about blogging on the internet. So I really wanted to be educated before I went into it. I just felt like that made me better somehow.
Well, and it's like you said, you wanted to start out doing things right, you know, not on a Blogspot blog. And I mean, no offense to anybody out there who has a Blogspot blog, but, you know, there's definitely something to be said for like having your own domain name and having a well-designed website and just all that stuff that new bloggers don't necessarily know how to do. So I think that's probably one of the big keys to your success is just that you started out sort of all in. You were like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. And I think that's really inspiring for people to see that even when you don't necessarily know how to make that happen, there's always a way to find those resources and do the research and just figure it out and still have an awesome blog right from the very start.
Thank you.
So now you do a little bit of everything, kind of like you were telling us, you know, you have that background in design and now you do photography and you run several blogs and you've got your freelance business. So can you tell us a little bit more about each of your brands and what you do there?
Yeah, that's so funny. People always say that I like, how do you do everything? And it all like fits together for me. It doesn't feel like they're all separate things. They're just all parts of what I do. I like to do a lot of different things, and I feel like I've always been that way. So my freelance business, that's my main income source, and I'm mostly doing a lot of different stuff. Every day is really different. That's what I tell people. I do mostly print work. That's my favorite kind of work, which is magazines and layout, brochures sometimes. I do a little bit of branding, so coming up with logos and, you know, color schemes and picking fonts for companies to use. I don't like that work as much, but I do it because I can. And I do some web design, and sometimes I do like business cards or, you know, wedding invitations. It just sort of depends on what people want and need and if I have time. So it just, every week it looks really different for me. I work with small businesses, nonprofits, sometimes other freelancers, sometimes ad agencies or design agencies. It just depends. Every day is different. So that's the freelance business.
And so your freelance business then, do you have a URL or anything for that? Is that purely like via email, behind the scenes? Nobody actually sees kind of that portfolio.
Yeah, I have a portfolio. It hasn't been updated in a while, but the true graphic designer never updates her portfolio. It just like always takes a back seat. It's always on the back burner, the laundry list of things to do. So I have that. It's SusannaBrinkley.com, but it's I don't advertise it very much. Most of my clients I've worked with for years, especially the agencies and the other freelancers I've known for quite a while now. And then, you know, other times it'll be just someone that's one off and they just need one thing. And I usually just email them samples since I don't have a current website. And then, but my blog and it, I also say is like my living portfolio because I'm working on that all the time and I can always send people there. Be like, this is really recent because I updated it today.
Yeah. So your blog is called Feast and West. And is that feastandwest.com?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us a little bit about what you do there.
Yeah. I started this after I've been freelancing for about a year. I was feeling a little bit stuck in a rut with freelancing. I wasn't taking on the right projects for me at the time. And I really wanted to be writing and I really wanted to be designing. And I was also realizing at this time that I wanted to stay freelancing and I didn't want to be looking for a job. You know, after you get laid off, people are like, oh, find a new job. And I was realizing that I really didn't want to do that anymore. I was really discovering what I wanted to do. But I knew that if I did try to get a job, I wouldn't be able to write and I wouldn't be able to take pictures. Those are, if you're a designer, you're the designer and that's your job. You don't get to do the other things. And I'm good at a lot of things. So I decided I would start this blog so that I could do all the things that I wanted. Because I kind of believe that if you can't find what you're looking for, you kind of have to make it and make it for yourself. So that's what Feast and West is. And I went, that summer, I went on a road trip with my dad and we drove from Washington, D.C. to Maine and then back to North Carolina. And it was insane and awesome. And I got to see a lot of the country that I hadn't seen. And I loved this trip is like where I hatched the idea for this initial magazine that I wanted, but what ended up being my blog. And I was obsessed with the idea of like how traveling kind of comes together with eating really good food. Because everywhere we went, I wanted to try the local cuisine. So, you know, when we got to Maine, we had lobster rolls and I was always on like Yelp trying to find like hole in the wall places where we could eat, you know, a cheesesteak in Philadelphia and, you know, all these awesome things. And so I was really seeing how being in a different place connected with food. And I love to cook. My mother is a chef. And so I've always been around really good food and have always loved cooking. And I also went to bartending school after college, so I love to make cocktails. That's one of the biggest things that I do on my blog. I post probably the most about cocktail recipes. Yeah, so this trip was like all these things sort of coming together. And then also the design aspect is like I wanted to go in every cute little shop that I saw and like check out the local artists and makers and, you know, see who is making things and who is from these places. So for me, like traveling and design and food kind of all come together in this weird way. And I like, so that's the like focus of my blog. And then, but it's also where I get to play with photography and with writing and with food.
I know, I think I read on your website a couple of weeks ago about how when you try to list your blog on different like blog collectives or things, they always want you to like pick a category and you can't do that because you want to do so many other things on your blog. You want to write about food. You want to write about travel. You want to write about topography if you so desire. And that's really, really hard to, you know, be listed for all of those things, even though you do them all really well. So I like that you are a creative who is kind of maybe ignoring that advice to do like the niche topics for your blog. Like, I'm only going to blog about this one thing. I think I just love that you're following all of your different passions. And like you said, making your own job out of it and making it all into something you can talk about.
Yeah. I told you my sister lives in Egypt, but she's an art teacher. And she told me this art teacher thing that I guess she teaches to her kids. I'm not a teacher, so I don't totally get it. But one of them is that you have to have a box in order to think outside of the box. And I've never liked being in the box. Like, I don't like to fit into one little category. So I love that about my blog. I like that when I sign up for a group that it feels weird to put, I'm a food blog or I'm a lifestyle blog, because I feel like I'm all those things. And I'd rather be crossing a lot of boundaries than feeling like I'm stuck inside one. It's a little bit more freeing to feel like I'm not constrained. Yeah.
Especially, I imagine, if like your recipe development hasn't been going so well lately and you're like, I'm just going to talk about this cool restaurant I went to instead. I think that gives you a lot more creative freedom to kind of do with, you know, your time, what you feel like doing at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So do you think that compartmentalizing into, like, you've got the freelance business where you focus mostly on design, and then you've got the blog where you're sort of combining this love of food and recipes and travel. And then you've also got Garnish & Co., which we haven't talked about yet, but we'll get there. Do you think that having those kind of different compartments and those different boxes actually helps you pursue all those different passions simultaneously?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. In my dream world, like you said, we'll get to Garnish & Co. in a minute. I won't be doing as much freelance, and I'll really be able to focus on teaching graphic design through Garnish & Co., but I'm not there yet. So they're still a little bit separate, but in the future, they'll definitely meld together. And yeah, I like sort of compartmentalizing those different groups a little bit. When I was thinking of starting Garnish & Company, I thought I could do this through my blog, but I also really, this is the like ad agency training in me. I was thinking about my audience. I was like, not everyone in my audience is a blogger and not everyone is a graphic designer. And that just didn't seem to make sense. And I didn't want to alienate any of my readers by coming up with a new angle and a ton of new articles on, you know, how to make your website work for you when, you know, they might not have a website. And they might be looking at this on their phone or reading it in their email, and they're not coming up with a website as the last thing from their mind. So I guess I was thinking about that more for my audience than I was for me. And so I can still have Feast and West be my like fun, playful area where I get to do, you know, make cocktails and write travel guides and have cooking tips and, you know, interview designers. And that can be really fun and have it. I want that to be a place where my readers can come in and really indulge in new things, like trying new foods and dreaming about travel. And I want it to be a place where they can really indulge. Whereas Garnish & Co. is a website to help people with design. And that's so business. And that's not the time when people are indulging. That's the time when they're focusing and they have dreams and goals and they're building. So it was more of an audience choice, I guess, but a personal one too, because I want them to be separate for me. Makes it a little easier.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about Garnish & Co. if you can, and kind of why you created it and what your goal with that is.
My goal was to build a website where people could come and get inspiration for their websites. People are always looking for a graphic designer, and they always want someone to come and do their website for them. But there's this assumption about graphic design that it's free, and it's not. And I get asked that all the time, you know, can you just do this and can you do it in an hour? No, I can't. It takes a long time. And I went to school for this and I worked really hard to learn everything that I know. And it's not fair for people to think that it's free. But at the same time,
it's like asking your surgeon to remove your gallbladder for free. Like, right. That just doesn't happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, programs like Microsoft Word and PowerPoint and things that people have at their fingertips all the time kind of make them think that it's easy. And the programs that I use are a lot more sophisticated, so they're different and they require training. But to an outsider, that kind of looks all the same because they don't know the difference. But just like I might not know the difference between two different kinds of doctors and their specialties. Like, it's just an outsider look, I think. So when people are starting a blog or a website for their business or a shop like on Etsy or Shopify or something, they realize they need to have a designer for the website so that people will buy their stuff or hire them or read their blog so that they can get ad money. Like it's this cycle. So they need to look good in order to do the thing that they love to do. And they need a designer to help them do that. But if you're just starting out, it is not realistic to hire a designer. And I realize that because I see people doing that all the time. And I have blogger friends who reach out to me and they're like, would you do my logo? I'm like, I would, but I know you can't afford me. Or I've had them tell me that. I've had them tell me they can't afford me. And that's fine too. There's a designer out there who can help them if they really want someone to help them design. But there's also people who, kind of like I was when I was starting my blog, you know, they want to do it themselves. They want to learn something new and they just need a little bit of guidance. So that's what I want Garnish & Co. to be, is a place where people can come and get a tutorial to help them make their blog look better in an afternoon, or they can hire me as a coach and I can work with them through a project like building an ebook for their opt-in, or, you know, optimizing their new website to look good, or coming up with a new logo. And so they're kind of doing the work, but I'm mentoring them to get their site looking good. I'm definitely that way as a even as a designer. I always want someone to look over my shoulder and, you know, tell me, does this look good? I have some designer friends that I will email and be like, I worked on this thing and no one's seen it because I did it at home and I work for myself. And would you please look at this and tell me it doesn't suck? So I want to be that for somebody else. So Garnish & Co. is still pretty new. I haven't done a lot with it yet, but I do have a new e-course launching soon about finding your target audience, which is the same method that I used for both Feast & West and Garnish & Co. is, you know, coming up with who are you talking to? Who are you trying to sell to? And then I have that, and that will launch with a Facebook group so people can post anything that they're working on in there, and they can, you know, get feedback from me and other bloggers and designers. So I'm really excited about that. And I have so many ideas for it. I know so many things and people are always asking me questions, and that's so great because I can have a lot of ideas for ways I can help people. So there's more to come.
Yeah. So it sounds like Garnishing Company is not only like a great place for you to mentor people and sort of give those design education opportunities that a lot of new bloggers are looking for, but it's also a place for you to earn some passive income so that you can do the stuff you were talking about earlier, where you can spend more time traveling and just not need to feel tied to your job all the time. And I'm also a freelancer, so I know how you feel like you should be able to travel whenever you want to, but you really can't, because working for seven different clients is kind of like having seven bosses that you need to get time off from instead of just one. And so I've thought a lot about passive income too, especially since I had my daughter, because that definitely has decreased the amount of time I have for freelance work. And I'm just wondering how you arrange your day or how you organize your time so that you can still prioritize those passive income projects. Because whenever I try to create passive income, I always end up putting it on the back burner because new client projects come in and I end up prioritizing those. And I just love seeing how other people do that and make time for that.
Yeah, productivity and prioritizing and time management is totally my weakness. I really struggle. I think that's just a creative person, actually. I think that we all struggle with that. I'm always thinking about what I'm working on, and I keep like running lists on my phone, and I always have a sketchbook next to me that is like, it takes me like a good year and a half to fill up a sketchbook, but it's always there. So I always have this like database at my fingertips of like sketches and lists, mostly just lists and me like writing down random notes and some sketching, but it's there and it's always next to me, and or I'll take it with me to a meeting and I just sort of like put everything in one place. So that's something that I probably have been doing since high school, when you had to have a sketchbook in art class and they, you know, made you do it. So I guess that stuck with me for a really long time. And I'm also love technology. I love it. And my favorite app is called Todoist, And I use that all the time. It is like a little game for me because it gives me points for checking things off my list. And sometimes I'm the worst. I'll even add something to my to-doist and then check it off. So I get points. But it makes me feel good to know that I've been productive. I'm a big fan of the StrengthsFinder books or series. And I did that when I did it in college. And then I did it again when I was working at the ad agency. And I love it. One of my strengths in there, I can't remember which one it is, but it tells me that I feel bad if I'm not productive. Like if I go to bed at night and I feel like I haven't gotten anything done, like I feel like I've had a bad day if I haven't accomplished something. And I told my mom that recently and she's like, that's so terrible. Why do you do that? I'm like, that's just how I am built, I guess. So having something that like is tangible and is telling me I am, you know, you got 30 points today for checking things off just makes me feel good. Like I've done something. So I have that. And then I also keep a paper planner to keep track of deadlines and you know, just little things I have to do during the day. So I have a lot of like avenues for keeping me on track and somehow they like all work together. So that helps me like with tasks that I need to do. And sometimes for a big project, I find that I work really well when I have an idea and I have a little bit of time and I just work through it. Like I have an ebook on my Feast and West site that's about how to build your home bar and, you know, like what liquors do you need and what equipment do you need to make a cocktail or a mocktail, you know, whatever is your fancy. And so it just sort of breaks all of that down. And I did that in a 3-day weekend. Like I did the whole thing and sometimes, but it was from start to finish and it was over with. And it was this like little creative spurt that I had. And a lot of my projects have been like that. Like when I started Feast and West, it was a creative spurt. When I started Garnish & Co., it was like I had a couple of weeks of like between projects for freelancing. So I built a whole new website. I did it over the holidays. I'm building a new site for some local food blogger friends, and we're called the Charlotte Food Bloggers. So I just built us a new site, and it was the same thing. I had a little bit of time and an idea, and I like put them together. So
that's great. So have you kind of learned for yourself that when you can feel that creative spark kind of bubbling up to kind of get stuff out of the way so that you can just run with it for as long as it lasts?
Yes, definitely. And like sometimes I just get excited as I know like I have, you know, a 3-day weekend coming up with a holiday and like I'm not scheduling anything else for that whole weekend and I'm just going to, you know, knock something out I've been meaning to do. So I get really excited about this project I've been excited about and I build up this creative time in my head and then I, you know, put on Netflix or some good music and, you know, make a big pot of coffee and I just get to work. So I also work really late. Sometimes when I'm doing that, I'll work till 3 a.m. because I can work really well at 3 a.m. most of the time. I try to maintain a regular sleep schedule, but I am a total night owl. So I will work as long as I have to get something done.
Nice. I wish I could do that sometimes. I used to think I was a morning person, but really, I think I'm just like, I'm not any time of day. I'm just like, I'm sleepy in the afternoon. I'm slow to totally wake up in the morning, but I'm definitely not a night owl. I'm like, I need to find that time where I can just get stuff done like that.
I heard about something on the Lively Show podcast. I think it was one of the early episodes, and someone talked about finding your golden hour. And I love that term because that's a photography term, like to go like take pictures at golden hour. But and that being like the time right before like dusk when the sun's about to set and you can take really good pictures. But in terms of productivity, it's like what time of day are you most productive? And for me, that's like late afternoon, like into early morning. Like, I don't know, I should really like utilize that more and, you know, not go out to dinner and things like that. But, you know, or sleep in. I don't know. I sometimes think I'm not doing it quite right, but also try to maintain a regular work day because I have so many freelance clients and I know they're, you know, wanting me to check my email at 9 a.m. and I can't work till 3 a.m. and get up at 9 a.m. So They don't want me to work for them if I
this
do.
This is true.
Yeah, if you could do that, we would need the like secret sauce that you're drinking or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've found my golden hour quite yet either. I like to think that I'm a morning person, and I am if I can like get myself out of bed at 5:30, 6 o'clock. I love to put in an hour of really concentrated work on my own stuff before I go into my day job. But I'm finding that at my day job, I think I'm most productive between like 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. because I'm really motivated to like get a whole bunch of stuff out the door before everyone else leaves. I don't know. Maybe that's a weird hour to be really productive. I'm not sure.
No, I think that's similar to me too. Like I would, when I worked at the agency, and I noticed this a lot, like I would get really annoyed if someone scheduled an afternoon meeting that I had to be in because I liked working. And like, I didn't want to be interrupted on my project. And I used to be really annoyed, probably not good, but I see that for myself now. Like I try not to go, you know, I try not to take lunch breaks where I'm meeting people for lunch, because I find that it throws off my whole day. It's like the first rule of freelance is to not go out to lunch because you never get like refocused. And I'm totally guilty of that. I never seem to get refocused. But if I, you know, spend a couple hours in the morning working on, you know, chores or getting a few things done that I've been meaning to do in the morning, and then in the afternoon, really focusing on one or two projects, I get a lot done. And I also have to remind myself not to have more than like two deadlines a day, and really one deadline is ideal. But sometimes, like this happened to me last week, I had three clients who needed something like all on Thursday, and it, you know, that'll, you have to do it because they need mm-hmm. it, and you're the only one to do it. I don't have any, you know, a coworker I can just say, hey, I don't want to work till 9 o'clock tonight. Can you work on this? I don't have that. So I have to really be careful and not take on too much at one time, because then it means I don't get to post on my blog or do the fun stuff that I like to do. So
yeah, finding balance with how much work you'll do for other people so that you can still focus on your own things is definitely a big, tough spot for most creatives, I think. So in addition to all that other stuff you do, then your client work and then your blog, you also are a contributing writer for the food site Collaborate. So how did you first get involved with them, and what made you want to share your food writing beyond your own blog?
I don't know what it was that had me looking for these opportunities. I think I read someone's blog post and they suggested, you know, finding some guest post opportunities. And I know a lot more now than when I first started doing that. And I know that getting your name on other people's websites is great. It also helps your website's search engine optimization. So anytime you have your link on another website actually helps your website. So writing for other people is a great way to help them out, you know, help them fill out their editorial calendar and also, you know, work on your writing chops a little bit, and then also help your website by linking back. So it can do a lot of stuff. So I found the Collaborate, and I found a blog called My Cooking Spot, and then Pretty Providence. And for the last like year and a half, I've been writing for all three of those sites off and on, usually trying to do like one or two posts a month total, like outside of what I was doing for Feast and West. So I wasn't, you know, totally overdoing it for things. And recipe posts take a long time because you have to try the recipe, make the recipe, photograph the recipe, write about the recipe, edit the recipe pictures, and then, you know, share it on social media. So it takes a long time. And so doing that for a lot of different people can be really hard. But so I try to limit myself so I'm not doing too many guest posts at one time. But I first got involved with them. I think I found the Collaborate on Twitter, and I just started chatting with Bethany, the editor over there, and we hit it off. So I did some different travel pieces for her, writing about restaurants in North Carolina, different, you know, food experiences, and which is, again, like exactly what I wanted to start my whole blog around. I feel like Bethany and I are kindred spirits and loving like food and travel. So, it was great. I loved writing for them, but I actually made myself not do that anymore. So I was writing a lot for other people's websites, and I was getting really burnt out on having to meet their deadlines, that I told myself I wouldn't do that in 2016. I just needed to focus on all the things that I started for myself and getting those. Like, I feel like I got a little off balance toward the end of last year. So I'm trying to refocus myself and get back to writing for my own sites.
Speaking of kind of burnout and feeling that you were a little bit overwhelmed this last year or so, how do you recognize burnout in yourself? Do you?
Oh yeah, I can tell when I start blowing off like my friends and I know and I'm canceling like things I would normally really enjoy and look forward to, and I'm like, you know, texting and I'm like, oh, I can't do that anymore. It usually comes at times when I'm really busy. So I can see that coming when the busyness is impeding into my personal life. So that's like the first sign. And then I start to, you know, blow off the friends, and then I don't want to do anything. And then all I want to do is sit around and watch Netflix, but it's sort of exacerbated because I have stuff to do. So it just sort of can be this spiral. And then I realize you got to stop. You have to like back off and like say no to some projects and, you know, maybe take a break from your blog. I've actually been not posting on my blogs as much lately, which has been actually quite nice to just say, like, Susanna, you don't have to do this today. Like, it's okay. Like, you're not going to get in trouble. Like, no one, you know, like, you're the boss. You don't have to do that. So just sometimes just having a little grace and knowing when to step back and just cool it and take a rest is really good. So I'm trying to be more aware of when I'm, you know, going through those burnout phases. And that reminds me of something I learned in high school or college or something. Like, when you see those wildfires on TV and they are so devastating and, you know, everyone's evacuated from their homes. I remember going to California to visit my aunt when I was in, like, one summer in college, and I saw the aftermath of one of those wildfires. Everything's just black, and it's really sad. So, you know, like, all those beautiful trees and animals lost their homes, and it's so sad. But then it's actually an amazing thing that happens because there's all this rebirth and new growth, and lots of tiny plants grow that only grow when there's a wildfire. So I think that burnout in some ways is really necessary. Like, you have to go through these experiences of burnout, and you're just really overwhelmed, because I think you really appreciate the times when you're not feeling that way and when you want to be inspired. And sometimes I think some of my best ideas come from a place of burnout, because I really need to get out of it, so I have this next great idea. And I think Feast and West came out of that. Like, I was feeling burnout with my freelance, and so I had this idea to do something that really made me happy and would get me out of that rut. So I think it's a cycle, and it's, you know, when you're at the bottom, it's not fun, but it's also really necessary.
Yeah, that's not a perspective we've ever heard before, or that I've ever even thought of before, that burnout is necessary. Usually we spend so much of our time trying to avoid it or circumvent it or somehow just like keep it from happening. You know, we're like, whatever happens, like, don't let yourself get burned out. But I like that different perspective.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. Like, you're going to get burnt out, and just how can you make the most of it for yourself? So, you know, I have definitely been there where I'm so burnt out that I get sick, I get a cold, and I'm miserable. And you have to try to know the signs and what your signs are. Everyone's signs are different, and recognize them and maybe let yourself get a little burnout, and then you'll come out of it. You always will. You just have to like think about it and think about what you want. You know, why are you burnt out? What do you want in your creativity? What brought you to this point? What's not working, and fix it, and that'll propel you into the next best thing. I just think it's part of the cycle you have to go through.
Yeah, I really like that, because in a way, I think sometimes we try so hard not to get burned out that we stress ourselves out and end up contributing towards the burnout anyway. And like you were speaking about strengths finders earlier, and my top strength is responsibility. So I feel very beholden to people, even if I'm really not. Like you were saying, about how you feel like you have to blog all the time and then you really don't. Like, you're the one who's in charge of when you blog. Your audience isn't like going to be mad at you if you don't post every day. But sometimes it really does feel like that. So we just keep pushing ourselves forward and then the burnout happens. But I can see how it's sort of a natural part of the cycle when you look at it that way. And it's something that you get past and you get over, and good things can even come from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I imagine one thing that helps you get out of a burnout cycle, Susanna, is food and coming up with new recipes or even just going out for like a stellar dinner in your neighborhood. So I know Ashley has said that she is a complete and total recipe follower. And I have to agree, most of the time I like a recipe at least as a starting point. Like, I'll add in different spices or whatever, but I want someone to kind of tell me what I'm doing. So how do you, as a recipe developer, kind of come up with all of these ideas? Where do you get your inspiration or your creativity?
It comes from all kinds of places. And sometimes it's like looking through my pantry and seeing what I have, or, you know, what have I not used in a while? Sometimes I usually end up in the spice cabinet because that's like, that's, it's really fun. There's a spice shop in Charlotte that I love to go to and just smell stuff and taste stuff. And they're so nice. They always have great ideas for me. So sometimes I go there and I get ideas. Sometimes I just like, what did I buy the last time I was there? And what haven't I used yet? So sometimes it's something like that. I look through cookbooks. I look on Pinterest. I look at other people's blogs, and I try not to do that too much because I don't want to I definitely don't want to steal anyone's ideas, but I also don't want to like inadvertently steal someone's idea. Like, you know, think, oh, I have this great idea for a cocktail. And then, you know, look at like Google. I always try to Google something to see, you know, what, is there a lot of this out there? Like, would this be something people would want to look, you know, to look for? And then I'm like, oh, I already saw this on so-and-so's blog. I definitely shouldn't even make that. So back to square one. So I want to find some things that are unique, but for my audience, they're all young cooks who, kind of like you, don't have a lot of time. They maybe don't know a lot about cooking. They might know a little bit, or they like to start with a recipe, but they, you know, they want to do something unique. They don't want to do the same thing that's in the top thing on Pinterest as everyone else is doing. Nobody wants to bring the same recipe to a party as somebody else. Like, you want to have a little bit of fun. So I always try to take a recipe one step further. And you know, like, one of my favorite recipes that I did was a cinnamon roll, but I wanted it to be, you know, have a different sort of filling on the inside, so that it tastes really different. So I did a dirty chai cinnamon roll.
It does.
So I did, it's one of the recipes I'm most proud of. Is, it's just, you know, you can use any cinnamon roll recipe, like whatever, like from scratch you use, but for the filling, you just use like a cinnamon and a ginger and some, you know, some black pepper, like any of those like chai spices, Indian spices. And so that's what you're using. And then a dirty chai, if you ever get those at the coffee shop, is like a chai with a shot of espresso in it. So then you also add some espresso to the mix. And so you have this really like rich coffee and spice mixture inside the cinnamon roll. So like something like that. I try to think of what is a recipe everyone wants to know, and then, you know, how can I like put a twist on it and make it a little bit different so that it's not just like everything else out there.
I really, really regret that you live across the country right now. I want to be your neighbor and eat all of your leftovers.
I have so many leftovers. I wish you would move next door. I would bring them to you. I can't eat a whole tray of cinnamon rolls. I am lucky I live near my family because I can take a lot of food to my grandmother, some my aunts and uncles, and they're always so happy to have like a tray of cookies. So
I was going to say, this podcast is going to go out and everybody who lives within like a 50-mile radius of you is going to be like, I'll take your leftovers.
I would be happy to give them to you.
Yeah, I know. Even just like my husband and I will make like a plate of brownies and be like, we do not need to eat 24 brownies, just the two of us. What are we going to do with these? So I always just send them with him to work and hope that they eat them.
Yeah. It's also okay to eat them all yourself, but just like, you don't have to do it all the time.
Yes, not all the time. That would be the problem. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So something else that I do just to just to get out, like to give myself some creative, like a creative base. So as I'm like coming up with recipes all the time. So sometimes like the last thing I want to do is like make a really good dinner. So I don't want to like go buy frozen food. Like I'm better than that. So I've been really into Blue Apron lately. And, which I feel so lazy about, but it's like you get a box of groceries and then like they send you the recipes and you make the food and that's all really good food, like restaurant quality dishes. And I don't have to like plan a really awesome meal, but it's, you know, still good for me and healthy. And, I also learn a lot of new stuff. Like they send me ingredients that I've, you know, sometimes I've never heard of, or a spice that I'm not familiar with, or an ingredient I would never buy. Like I don't really cook a lot of fish for myself, and they often send fish. So I end up like learning about fish. It's not that I don't like fish. I just don't buy it. So I never make it, and I'm never like, ooh, I'm going to make fish tonight. Like that's just somehow never comes to mind. But when they send it to me, it's really nice. So I don't know, sometimes getting out of my comfort zone and trying a new recipe that someone's like, yep, you got to make this because you have all the recipes, all the ingredients and all the recipes. So yeah, that's fun.
Well, and that sounds like it takes the guesswork, like the having to decide what you're having for dinner tonight, out of the equation.
Yes.
That is the hardest part.
It is. It's just like, okay, well, yeah, I'll follow a recipe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it teaches me about, you know, what makes a good recipe. Like I made one tonight, for example, and like there was a step that was really confusing. So it helps me be more aware of writing a good recipe. So it's actually, you know, really good for me to try these different things because it has me thinking about how I write my recipes and am I being clear. And yeah, it's good all the way around.
Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. I will have to try that. You're like the third person who's told me about Blue Apron this week alone. So it might be a sign.
It's really fun. I highly recommend it.
Okay. Well, I know all of us struggle with all of, you know, managing all of the moving parts of our lives. Even like we've just talked about, deciding what to have for dinner sometimes can just take the life right out of you, and you order pizza and then, you know, you just feel bad. How do you find time to manage all these different moving parts of your creative life? You know, we've talked about your freelance work, your blog, your Garnishing Co. project, and then also multiple Instagram accounts and Twitter feeds and all of that kind of thing. Like, how do you make it work?
I don't know. I feel like that's such a loaded question. I have a lot of like apps that I use for like the social media, and I think I've got like a whole system down. I guess that's the answer. The answer is designing a system that works for you. So for my work day and tackling my work, I always start with email, and then I always do the first deadline that I have for the day. And then I usually eat lunch like late afternoon, or not late afternoon, like a late lunch, early afternoon, like 1 or 2 o'clock. And then I do my second deadline, and then I take a break and I go to yoga class like a couple times a week, or I go out and meet a friend because I'm inside all the time and I need to get out and like see other human beings. It's really important. And then I come home and I make dinner, or if I haven't eaten already, and then I watch TV and I might work on my blog or a different project at night, and then I go to bed. So it's like, that's my system. And I know when I can break away from that system. So that's part of it too, is, you know, building a system and then like knowing when it's okay to break the rules. I try to make time for everything, as otherwise I won't get done. So for my blog, I try to set out a couple hours a day to work on that, whether it's in the morning or between projects or at night. So I just sort of make sure I always have time for everything. And, you know, I have to set aside time each week to manage my social media, and I can be really bad about remembering to post to my Instagram accounts, or, you know, going to find, you know, blog posts to tweet about or different things like that. But if I try to consolidate and, you know, build that into my schedule, into my system, then it gets done. So I have one of my strengths from StrengthsFinder is the strategic strength. That's one of my things where I have to, you know, really think about everything kind of almost mathematically and piece everything together like a puzzle. So, but that's how it works for me. I have to build the system, and then I can break the system once it's there.
Yeah, I think that's good encouragement for a lot of creatives, because so many of us just feel like, just by nature of being creatives, you know, like we can't have a system. That would be like constraining our creative energies and freedoms, and we need to just do whatever we want to do. And that, of course, leads to people who don't sit down and actually do their creative work. So I think it's good advice to have a system.
I am very, very systematic. I love spreadsheets and Google Docs. Like I said, I love technology. So any way I can bring that into my life and, you know, help me manage things like the Todoist, or I use Buffer for social media. So like any of these little smaller systems that can play into my bigger system, really help me break it down. And like we were saying earlier, I compartmentalize a little bit. So I guess I am being strategic about how I compartmentalize, but I can, if I'm knocking out social media, I might do like Feast and West social media for 30 minutes. And then I do Garnish & Co. social media for 30 minutes. And then like I've done an hour of social media, and I just sort of keeps everything together. So,
yeah. So at the end of each of our episodes here, we always do a little mini book club because we're both big readers and most of our guests are too. So we would love to hear from you about some of the books that have really inspired you as a creative. So like you mentioned, some of the books that helped you get started blogging, or just any books that you've been reading and enjoying lately, if you'd want to tell us about some of those.
Okay, so the book that I read before I started blogging was Blog Inc. by Joy Cho. And like some of it was like I already knew because I came from the ad agency background, and I knew how to, you know, like I knew things like I should spell check my blog posts before I post them. Like some of that was like didn't apply to me. But some of it was really useful, like, you know, helping me find other bloggers and how to pitch them to do collaborations. And like if you want to start a blog, that's a great place to start. I mean, there's tons of blogs out there, and it's hard to know what is a good blog and what's a bad blog. Like there's so many now that it, you know, you don't know it, you know, who is this person and what is their background. But Joy Cho is a blogger. She's been blogging like since blogging became a thing, and I love following her. I followed her for a long time, and so I can really trust her and recommend her as a I don't want to call her like a blogging idol, but she kind of is. She's really cool. So that's a great book to start with. And she has other books. I haven't read them, but there's like the Freelancer Inc. and the Creative Inc. And I think there's even like a Mom Inc. and an Artist Inc. I don't know. There's a whole series. I forget what they're all called. But so there's something for you if you're a creative. If you don't want to do a blog, there's another book in that series that you might really like. So that's that one. And then I always have an AP style guide at my desk because that's my journalist background, and I still don't use the Oxford comma, and it's fine.
Unless so, you're me, because I have the Chicago Manual of Style as my Bible by my desk.
I was going to say I did my degree in literature, which would have been AMA style, modern languages, or MLA style. And then I also did a degree in history, which was Chicago style. And then at work, we do AP style. And I cannot keep it all straight.
Yeah, I've only had to work with AP style, so I'm okay with it. But like I took a copy editing class in college, and we had to memorize a lot of it. So it's stuck with me, and I love it. But again, that's a system that you develop for yourself. So like, yep. Whatever system you want to use, just be consistent.
Yep, exactly. That's like the key to editing, is like whatever you want to do, just be consistent with it.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I also have the Recipe Writer's Handbook, which is another thing that I found when I was looking for like food blogging books when I was starting my blog. But I didn't know there was like a style guide for writing recipes. So if you're wanting to get into food blogging, that's a good one to have. And I think a lot of food bloggers don't know about it. I've told other people about it, and they're like, wow, I didn't know this exists. But it explains, like, it's from newspaper writers who, like, they're the food editors of have been at some big newspapers, and they tell you how they've written different recipes, you know, how to abbreviate, you know, cups and teaspoons, and like there's a style for that, and that's not in the AP style guide. So it's nice to have around, or it tells you how to spell certain cheeses or different things, or when to capitalize different stuff. So
yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're giving that one a shout out, because as an editor myself, it drives me nuts when I click over to a recipe from Pinterest and it's a blogger who maybe doesn't have experience with, you know, writing out a recipe in a way that's really clear and easy for somebody to understand. It drives me nuts. So if you're posting recipes, please do look up the Recipe Writer's Handbook.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an awesome one. And then reading is something that's like every New Year's, I make this list of resolutions, right? Like everybody. And like reading is always on there. Like I never make time to read. So something I'm trying to do this year is to make time to read and to journal and just like make some time before I go to bed to like break away from the bright computer light and read. So I've been on my bookshelf are Yes, Please by Amy Poehler, and I haven't ordered them yet, but Mindy Kaling's 2 books. Yeah. So I haven't read those. And then I've like started Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, and I haven't gotten through it, but I love her. I've like read everything she's ever put out. She's amazing. And then Girl Boss by Sophia Amoruso, I think is how you say her name. Mm-hmm. She's really cool. That's something I read a while ago, and just and you know, she's not a blogger, but it's a different story about how somebody created a business. And as a business owner, like that's so inspiring to learn how other people think, just like this podcast. So that's an awesome one. And I read Bossy Pants by Tina Fey. So any of those like memoir bio books by like cool ladies, I'm super into them right now.
Cool lady memoirs are always worth reading. Yeah. I haven't read all of those on your list. I liked both of Mindy Kaling's books better than Amy Poehler's book, actually, which I was kind of surprised by. But Mindy Kaling's books are actually really good. Like, they're a nice, lighthearted read for the end of the day.
Awesome. I can't wait to get into them.
Yeah, I read her first one and really enjoyed it. I haven't dived into the second one. Dove. I never know how to pronounce that correctly. And I have an English degree.
Yeah. It's okay.
I just finished Yes, Please. It took me forever to jump on that bandwagon. And I really enjoyed some parts of it. Like, I love how Amy Poehler is constantly telling you, like, if you want to do something, do it. Don't wait for permission. I think that's really important for a lot of creatives to hear. But some of it just kind of fell flat. Like, you could tell she had to just fill some space in a book.
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked Big Magic, what I've read of it so far. Just, like, the part about ideas and where ideas come from and how they can kind of shift and move for you. I am such an idea person, and coming up with ideas is like it comes and goes, but I could really relate to her in that section of the book where she's talking about ideas. And she has a crazy story about like she had this idea and then it went away, and then she talked to a friend and found out the friend had the same idea. Like, do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
Like that. I was, whoa.
Yeah, it was so like cool. When people actually read that story, because it's Elizabeth Gilbert and then Ann Patchett was the friend. And that's where like people who are reading that story are like, what? This is like mind blowing, because they're these two amazing authors. And I think that if anybody listening to our podcast hasn't read Big Magic yet, they're probably going to hop on that bandwagon real quick, because everybody keeps recommending it.
It's really, really good.
Yes, I finally bought a copy on Saturday. Yay. I am one of those who is behind the curve here. So I bought a copy at an actual bookstore, guys. I walked into a bookstore and bought a copy of Big Magic. I felt really cool doing that. And so now it's sitting on my desk waiting for me to, you know, have time to read it.
That's awesome. I pre-ordered it because I love everything Elizabeth Gilbert does. And I had been listening to her podcast like all summer in preparation for the launch of that book. So I'm excited. She's good.
Yeah, her podcast and pretty much everything she says is like creative gospel.
Absolutely.
I feel like I'm out of the loop. I never ever read Eat, Pray, Love.
I didn't either.
I somehow missed that, but I loved The Signature of All Things. And so I listened to her podcast and it was really good. And so I don't know why I haven't read Big Magic yet. I just haven't.
Mm-hmm. So she has another book after Eat, Pray, Love that I also read. It's called Commitment. And so it's definitely like a relationship book, because it takes place like after Eat, Pray, Love. And it's about the man that she met in that book. And well, she met him before the book, obviously. But anyway, it's about that and their relationship and kind of like their road to marriage. So if like it's a definitely like a relationship and interesting book, and there's a lot of research in there, and it was like a little bit boring at times, and like I'm a single lady, so that didn't like all apply to me, but it was still a really interesting book, so I liked it too.
Yeah, I'll have to put everything she's written on my list, because actually I'm like the oddball out. I got Big Magic because everyone was talking about it, but I haven't read anything else she's written. Signature of All Things has been on my list for a really long time, but I've just never, like, I don't know, Eat, Pray, Love, like, never appealed to me. I don't know why, so.
I think Eat, Pray, Love, and I've talked about this with friends, is, like, you have to read it at the right time. So it's, like, I remember starting it and it not working for me, and then I picked it up later, and it was awesome. So I think it just sort of depends on where you are and with your creative journey and what you're setting out to do. I think it, if you're not in the right place, you'll find it really boring. But then when you're ready for it, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. We've talked about that on the podcast before. I think Ashley had said that she'd started The Art of Memoir and had to put it down.
Yes.
Cause you said like, yes, this is going to be good for, mm-hmm, me someday, but just not right now.
Yeah. I just wasn't in the right headspace for it. It's by Mary Carr. So, you know, it's going to be good, but I just haven't. Yeah, I should go back to that one. Maybe now is a better time.
Well, cool. Well, I think that is probably all the book talk we need to foist upon our listeners today. I there's so many books. I could talk about books for hours and hours and hours. So maybe I should just do that someday, not on the podcast.
Well, so Susanna, we always sort of wrap up the episodes by telling people where they can find you online. And I know you've got a lot of links and social media accounts, but if you want to just tell people like where your web URLs are maybe, and then they can find you on social media from there.
Yeah. So Feast and West is feastandwest.com, all spelled out FEASTANDWEST.com. And then garnishing.co. So the word garnishing and then .co. And then my handles for everything are the same, so it's at Feast and West and then at Garnishing Co.
Excellent. And we will make sure to link to everything in the show notes, so anyone who wants to like specifically look up a handle, they can. Otherwise, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It has been just such a joy to talk to you about all of your different creative projects, and we cannot wait to see where you go in 2016.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
Yeah, thanks so much for chatting with us, Susanna. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.